Well, hello everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is August the 9th, 2012. And yeah, I'm just back from the Olympics in London and wanted to share some Olympic lessons with you and give you some insights as to how to work with your athletes. These lessons, I think, apply to everything in life, regardless of whether you're working with people at, starting out or were professional athletes or Olympic athletes or were high school or college folks, just at any level. Usually athletes have some sort of goal and something they're working toward. So this is a way that you can, I can tell you what I've learned at the Olympics to apply to each of you, regardless of what sport or what level you're working at. So I wanted to talk about a number of topics. I think, did Duran just join us too? Is that Duran? Duran Blomberg, I think I see you on the line. Maybe he's got his line muted.
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I just wanted to say hi. Yeah, how are you? Good to have you, Duran.
Good. Thank you. How's London?
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, just a fantastic experience. And so I wanted to share with you those lessons I've learned there and what you can all take with you, from this experience, because it's really great to, what it's like to be. Some of the things I wanted to share with you are, here, I'll just put this on mute because I think there's a little bit of background noise. Here we go. And then I'll open it up for questions so you can ask questions as well. I wanted to talk about sort of the inside story, what it's like inside the Olympic Village where only the athletes and credentialed staff can go, which I got access into through working with my athletes, and then how to work with your athletes. You have to prepare them for a big event and then also during their event, like I did during the Olympics and other key competitions that you might be working toward. And then the dynamics of that international competition for Olympics and professional ones, and then how to deal with a disappointing race, which I had to deal with some of my athletes, if something doesn't go quite right, and, let's say they're in the rounds going through the different heats that they have to go through to qualify, if they don't, or they just barely qualify or something didn't go quite right, how to bounce back quickly and make adjustments, and then talking about how to read your athletes, the mental mistakes that athletes can make, some of the things that we talked about, some topics from our last session, go into those more deeply about, building trust and, what to do 1 month before, 1 week before, 1 day before your big event, and then getting through the qualifying rounds, and then different creative ways that you can work with your athletes, the different challenges that come up, and how to work with different kinds of images, like I've used, sort of animal images with some athletes, how to be have the qualities of that they want through sort of imagining a different animal, like a tiger, a cheetah, whatever it is that they image that they come up with. And what to say and what not to say during your coaching. And then, if you get on TV or, some media, how to get your name and your book title on the TV screen is key. After this, I'll be able to send you a link to the NBC interviews that I was on. They're up now on NBCBayArea.com and then syndicated throughout the country. And then how to... how to create a mental training plan for your athletes and then use this for marketing to get testimonials and then be able to get other clients, quality clients to call and to hire you, and talk about mistakes to avoid in your coaching as well. So, I'll start with, if you've got questions that you'd like to ask me too, just hold on to those, and then we'll do a Q&A in between here, so you can ask questions as well. First, I wanted to talk about, when I got over there to London, you know, Shannon Roberry is one of my clients. She's a 1500 meter runner and also working with Sally Kipyego and several other athletes. And Shannon wanted to get me into the Olympic Village there to be able to work with her. That's where the athletes stay. And so if you are in that situation in a professional venue, often they have to apply for you to get in several days in advance. And so I, Shannon asked me for, to get the passport number and get my expiration date for that and lots of details. And so then they fill out a little form and submit that a few days ahead of time. So she did that. And so then when I arrived there, the next day on August 4th, we met outside the, it's helpful if you have your athlete meet you outside that, the Olympic Village. And then we went in, and then there's lots of security, about three or four levels of security you have to go through, and they have to check and make sure you're on the list, on the VIP list of people that can get into the Olympic Village that day. So they checked and everything checked out fine. And so I got my guest pass for that day. They take your passport away. That's kind of scary when you're in a foreign country. They take your passport and they give you your guest pass with your passport number on it, and then you're allowed to stay in the Olympic Village for a whole day until 9 p.m. in the evening. And then you, when you come back to give your pass back, they give you your passport, return your passport to you. You hope that they give you the right one back, not someone else's. You definitely want to check on that. They were very organized there at London. So that was good. When I went to Greece a few years ago to work with Stacey DeGrillo, they were not as organized, and you want to make sure that they're giving you the right passport. So I got in through the security, and then went first. Shannon and I had an interview scheduled for with NBC. They were doing a story on me and my work with athletes and the sports psychology aspect of things. And so we had done some filming earlier at her home in San Francisco. And then they were doing part two of the story over there in, in the Olympic Village. So we went through and met up with NBC folks, and that was another big security, going through a lot of security to get into there, to their media area. But it all worked out. So we did the interview for NBC, and it was great. For something like that, you want to, prep your athlete ahead of time to ask them, like for Shannon, I said, you might want to think about like the top three things that our work together has helped you with, and think about the most important thing about our work together and what that's meant to you. And, some specific things like that. If you can ask them a few questions ahead of time and just have them think about those, then, you can get a better response from your athlete about their work with you. Because some athletes are really good with their sport, but they don't know how to talk articulately and, express themselves well. Fortunately, Shannon is very from Duke University and speaks very well, and she's fine. But if you can give them a few questions ahead of time, that really helps to for them to speak well of you. So so then they interviewed me first, and here's some questions that they might ask you, the media. They asked, they asked me first, how did you get to work with these athletes, with top athletes? So I told them about that, and I told them about my experience in the Ironman and how that really helped me to create a foundation for my work as a sports psychologist. And then I told them about my book, Your Performing Edge, and how I interviewed athletes for the book. And then athletes were approaching me to work with them. So that's one way that you can get your book into an interview, is just to talk about it as a sort of way that you, a foundation for your work. And then they asked me about, what does visualization, how does that work in the brain? And what's the, the sort of psychological or physiological how does that work, you know, in terms of, you know, mental training. And so, you know, I talked about how we're creating new pathways in the brain. And when you imagine something, you're actually, you know, strengthening the neural pathways and working with, we're working with the right brain as opposed to the left brain, that the, you know, the left brain is that logical, analytical, critical side of the brain that, that tends to be our inner critic, and most athletes tend to overthink things, and we get paralysis by analysis. But with visualization and mental training, we're working with the right side of the brain, that part that is more creative, more intuitive, more open to new ideas, and more something that we can, that athletes can, where they can create new images in their minds. So I talked about that part, and then they interviewed Shannon. They asked a few other questions. Let's see, just, you know, how long we've been working together, and some of the results that we've had. And then they asked to talk to Shannon about how, ask her about, you know, our work together. And so she, because I'd prepped her ahead of time with asking her about the top three things that our work has helped, so she was able to articulate that and talk about confidence and focus, and that it's just nice to have someone to talk to when you've got a lot of things rolling around in your head. Just being able to express them gets them out of your head. And she talked about, you know, the visualization, the MP3s. I talked about that in my interview as well, how that's a sort of a secret weapon, and that that they're custom MP3s just for that person. And so, and she talked about the the different ways that that has helped her, that now she has a whole library of these MP3s, and you know, one for anything that comes up. And so, yeah, it was a great, and then in the interview itself, they showed me talking and then her back and forth, and it was really, they put it together really nicely. So I'll send you a link for that, you know, right after this. And then we went, after the interview, we went back to her room, her dorm room, in the Olympic Village there, and we did a session leading up to her first round in the event. And the Olympic, I took some videos and photos of inside the Olympic Village, because even the media folks they're not allowed inside the Olympic Village, because they figure it would be too much pressure on the athletes. But I was allowed in there, and so it was, it's like a, you know, it's like a, if you can imagine a college campus. I mean, there's basically 15,000 athletes, all Olympians, inside this, you know, complex. And so it's really intense. but they did a really nice job. They've got, you know, so they're about, you know, oh, I guess 7-8 stories high, and each athlete has their own room with their name on the door. With you know, Shannon had her room there, and they're like dorm rooms at a college campus kind of thing. And they you know, but she had a room to herself. Sometimes I've been to other, like when I was working with Stacy in Athens, there'll be three athletes to a room, and sometimes, you know, 7 or 8 athletes will have to share one bathroom, so that can get really intense. So Shannon felt like for most of the time she's had access to another area. Her coach, I guess, got a hotel or some room in another part of town, so she's been staying there because she felt like the Olympic Village is too intense. There's just so much going on there, and everybody's competing, and everybody's anxious, and she tends to, said she doesn't want to get caught up in other people's anxieties, so she's had another place to stay for part of the time too. But it is, it's great to be able to be in there and just to see what's going on. Everybody is really focused, and the teams tend to stay together, and it's just, yeah, it's an amazing place to be with all these 15,000 athletes, the best athletes in the world, all in one place, all focused on, you know, one thing, on their goal. So then we went to her room and we did a session to get ready for the for her, you know, first round, which was on Monday. So this was Saturday when I was there, on August 4th. And yeah, she'd written out, it's helpful if you can have your athletes write out a few goals or what it is that they want to focus on for the you know, for their upcoming event for the first round. If you're working in a team sport, you know, like tennis or soccer or baseball, you know, of course you've got qualifying games, just like qualifying rounds. So this applies to any sport. In track and field, of course, you got the heats, and you got to go through the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and then the finals. Just taking a quick drink there, and so she wanted to. She had written out a few of the goals. She said she really wants to, you know, enjoy this opportunity, and realizing that she has the tools for anything there, and have that visualization of the tiger. We talked about, if you weren't on the call last time, we talked about this sort of tiger mentality. I'd asked Shannon if, because she felt like she is not aggressive enough. She's really a nice person, and you can get really boxed in, and you know, feeling really crowded with all these athletes running, you know, vying for a position in this, you know, going for the center lane or close to it, all going around with the 1,500 meters. Of course, it's four laps around. It's not that long. And so it can get really intense and people get knocked around. You can actually get, you know, people fall down sometimes. And so, you know, we all, if you remember the, there was a classic event of Mary Decker and Zola Budd way back, you know, many years ago, where Mary Decker was supposed to win, and she didn't. Neither one of them got. She got knocked down, and you know, in the final race, and it can get really intense. And so you know, Shannon's kind of concerned about that. So we talked about having. I asked her what kind of animal you would. Embody the qualities that you want to have, and she said something with a cat in the cat family, and then she said I think a tiger. The tiger mentality would be really good, because a tiger is, you know, very strategic in how it handles things, and it's it sits back and checks out the situation, and then at the just the right moment it goes for it, and it goes for its prey and goes for the kill, and uses its energy in the right way. So it's you know, conserving energy at first, and then it uses all the energy at just the right time. So we've been working on that, you know, and she really has responded well to that, kind of thinking about herself as a tiger and having all those qualities. And so she said that, you know, just like that, you know, the tiger, she said once it comes time to go, she wants to have that killer instinct and you know, stalking her prey and that kind of thing, just like a tiger would. And so she said, you know, she wants to have, during the warm-up, have that sense of gratefulness for being here. You know, I forget that at the Olympics, it's really a privilege to actually be there. And everyone is so focused on the intensity and the, you know, expectations of everyone. But really, if you can, you know, I've been encouraging her to have that sense of thankfulness and gratefulness for being there, then it helps you to relax, take in some deep breaths, and she said she wants to, you know, be calm and run smoothly the first two laps around to be able to save energy, and then with the last two laps to go, be able to you know, shift her focus to have those what I call soft eyes. I've been working with Shannon with that concept of soft eyes, which is, you know, having a broader vision of what's going on around you. When we have you know, sort of anxious, tense eyes, when we're really anxious, usually you get that tunnel vision and you can't really see you can just barely see what's in front of you, and often you aren't aware of everything. But if you can relax a little bit more, then you have what I call soft eyes, which are, you know, the kind of eyes where you can see everything around you, and you're aware of what's going on within you, and you can anticipate what's going to be happening with athletes around you. So if someone is going to come in front of her, you know, she can use whatever she needs to. You even put your hands out, your elbows out, or say, hey, you know, just to use your voice to hold your space. So be more aggressive, not obviously you can't be knocking people down, but you can be holding your space appropriately. And she says she wants to be looking for her opening, so that if she is, you know, behind some other people, having that patience and then finding just the right time to look for an opening and protect her position there. Because once you get an opening, oftentimes people will make a move on you. So moving through the pack of people to be able to do it smoothly and efficiently. And if you get tripped or something happens, to be able to press the reset button. So working on that concept of a reset button to be able to reset. And she's actually thinking of a red reset button that she could press on. And so that's been very helpful for Shannon to be able to think of something that she can hit, so that it's like resetting your mind, recentering, refocusing, regrouping, and going back to being able to just, okay, so that happened and let's move on. Because she tends to, she said, get kind of flustered and frustrated with what's happening, and then hard to get back into sync or into the zone. So that's a great concept, I think, that you can work on with your athletes too. To how many times can you hit the reset button when something happens that's unexpected? To be able to just not let it bother you, to reset, refocus, regroup, and just move on, and not get emotional about it, but just move forward. And then Shannon said the last lap, she wants to be able to trust her tools. We talked about trust her judgment, that to be able to move forward and still stay relaxed, and trust that my body, in what my body's saying, what I should do, and trust in the moment. And then the last 100 meters, be able to say, okay, now go, and have that sort of tiger mentality and really go for the kill, and take a deep, and before that, even take a deep breath. That grounding and centering is really valuable. So so we worked on all of that with that first you know, we just talked about it first during our session there at the Olympic Village, and then, I ask her questions about exactly the way she'd like it to go, and what happens, you know, the different scenarios. It's really key to talk to your athlete about what are the different possible scenarios that could happen, and then how would you like to respond to those. And then you can make a visualization for each one of those, or you can combine them into one, you know, MP3 visualization of, let's try, you know, number one, let's say it's a fast race, and then you just have to hang on for the whole time, or it may be a slow pace, slower race, and then everyone's going for it at the finish, so you have to decide when you're going to move out and get into the right position. Sometimes it's a decision-making process of, do you go at 600 meters to go or 500 meters to go, get into position. If you wait till only 400 meters to go with one lap to go, then it's too, you know, that's when everyone else is going. So it's, they can get really cluttered up with the, you know, being in too big a group. So you want to get into position early. And it's just trusting your body. So we went over that sort of thing. And I think those sort of principles apply to any sport, to tennis, to golf, to soccer, basketball, and anything that you want to get into. I know Anna, we've got a new person, Anna, on our call, and is into basketball, so you can relate to these same kinds of techniques there to be able to hit to find that right energy inside and be able to go use your energy in the right ways. So, and she, we practiced also if a person's passing her, you know, to be able to, rather than saying, oh, geez, you know, I'm getting passed, you want to just get right behind that person, tuck right in with them, and so that you can use their energy and use whatever's happening in the race or in the event to your advantage. And use that person's energy. Use the magnet technique, like I've talked about, put the magnet right on that person's back as soon as they pass, and then let her go. Go right with that person. So we talked about all of that, and then I did a. We also talked about trusting your instincts, so you can kind of know. Know when in the race is the key time to go, and at 200 meters, whenever that happens, just try to be near the front, be tucked in, and have a clear area right there, and conserve your energy, and get a sense of what's happening, and be able to have enough energy so that you can think clearly, and be able to find your opening, and then. Deal with any of the scenarios that come up so you have that confidence so you can know when to challenge the other people. And we talked also about having, that she needs to trust that she has the ability to compete with these women out there. I mean, it can be really intimidating in the Olympics. You've got, here are the best women in the world, women from many countries, all there who are the best in their country. And people, new women that are emerging all the time. So, it can be, it can kind of shake your confidence sometimes. So we talked about how she could, be able to, when she gets those thoughts, do that exercise with putting a line down the middle of a piece of paper and putting your negative thoughts on the left-hand side and your self-doubts, and then putting on the right-hand side, putting your power words or positive reframing. So, for instance, she said, she's saying to herself, I don't want to get boxed in, don't want to be boxed in. She's saying that to herself on the left, and I said, okay, Shannon, what do you want to happen, and what should we put on the right side of that page? And she said, I want to feel comfortable, and I helped her with this one because she was having a little trouble coming up with stuff. I said, feel comfortable in the pack, and feel comfortable running in the group, and feel that sense of openness and a sense of the right space of the people around her. So we did that with several of her negative thoughts and self-doubts, putting them on the left side of a page, and then on the right-hand side writing the opposite of that, or what she wants to be thinking. So so I did that visualization with her on last Saturday. And then her first round was on Monday, and during that round, what I don't know if you've been following that, some of you are following in track and field, and some of you are in other sports, I know. So what happened was the first six in each heat qualify automatically to go on ahead to the semifinals, and then and she was in the first heat there, and the first six qualify. She was seventh, which is not a good place to be, because then you have to wait and find out if the next, they only take the next two people with the fastest times out of all the heats. So she had to wait around and see if any other women were faster than her in the next two or three heats, and which was kind of scary. Luckily, she was in the fastest heat, so she did have the next fastest time, so she did qualify. So then she sent me an email, and here's the of things that we should talk about. And this is, I want to encourage you to also to, this is, Shannon's given me permission to talk about her as a, that I'm working with her as an athlete, of course, but all the details, of this, we want to just keep within our group here since she's competing and all, and this is, very, specific stuff to her, on these calls, just to not share this with other people, because I'm doing this just for you, for your own learning, and but it's really valuable information, I think, to learn how these athletes, you know, what happens in the middle of a competition like this. So round one, she says, I'm in the semifinal. Dr. Joanna, well, I'm in the semifinal, didn't qualify automatically as I was hoping, but qualifying is qualifying at the end of the day. That's all that matters. I felt really calm and excited for the race today, but I did feel that my confidence is a little fragile. I made a tactical error at 600 meters to go and then ended up running wide, extra wide, and I also didn't feel like I did a good job relaxing myself in the first two laps. So when it came time to go and accelerate in the third lap, I was already feeling a little overextended. Moving forward, I want to stay for the next round. I want to stay relaxed in the first two laps. I want to stay tucked in and only thinking about what's happening right around me. And when I get to the third lap, then I want to start moving out and finding an opening and cover the moves, meaning covering, responding to anyone else who's moving forward. And once I hit the last lap, trust my instinct and remember my tiger. And I think I lost that ferociousness today when I got bumped around. And I think it's that is the key to winning. And then it says, can we talk before I leave from London? So I did another session with her that night in London, and by phone. I think it was really helpful to for her getting doing the next race. So I did another session with her and did talked about that. And this is a good example of how to, you know, handle some situation when, when you've got an athlete that's kind of feeling sort of fragile, and how to give them suggestions and what to talk about. And I did a lot of just listening at first. That's really important, to just listen to what the athlete has to say and wait to give advice until after you've really, let that athlete talk and understand really what's going on. So before I talk about what I said to her, let me open up the lines here and ask you, if you were coaching Shannon, what you would say to her about, she was just barely qualified and feeling kind of, her confidence was kind of shaken. Let me open up the lines here. So if anyone can talk. What would you do if you were, coaching Shannon? And what would you say to her in that session to help her? Here she is, she's just barely qualified from the quarterfinals to the semifinals here and wants to sort of get her confidence back. Anybody have some thoughts? Oh, hi. Is that Duran?
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Great to hear from you. Yeah, go ahead.
I would recommend for her to go somewhere to relax and take her journal with her and write down, recall what went on during the qualifying event, and have her use the tools that you taught her, the power tools that you taught her to help her get ready for her semifinal for the next race.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's a good idea to, go back to the things that we've already been working on. Yeah, that's excellent, Ron. And journals are really valuable tools for sure. And talking about how you can, what you can do to, how you can relax. And different things that you can that she could do to be relaxed there, feel comfortable, in the group and all, running in that pack. So that's great. Yeah, thanks, Duran. Any other suggestions? What do you guys think?
Yeah,
hi, this is Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy. Yeah, go ahead.
What I would do is I would go back to her best performance and kind of talk about that a little bit, and then have her make almost like a confidence resume where she writes down the things that she's done in her past that have been her biggest accomplishments and what it was that gave her the confidence from that, and so that she could just continually look over that and then maybe do some visualizations about that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's great, Amy. Yeah, I think it's a really good idea. And that's one of the visualizations you can do with your athletes, too, is like ask them, what are your top 10 races or your top 10 games, top 10 performances, or top 5, whatever number you want, and then have them, talk about those, because that can really get athletes on a real high and a real confidence and realize, hey, I've done this many times before, and I just need to go back to what I know, what I know works. So that's great. Yeah, thanks. If you've got some background noise, you might want to just press *6, and then you can mute your phone. So that's great. Thanks, Amy. Yeah, that's super. Yeah, who else? I think a couple other people were jumping in, too.
Yeah, it's Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Yeah, how's it going?
Good, good.
Yeah, I think I've been watching her race, so if her confidence is a little bit tarnished because of tactical, I think you just go back to the original goals of, like, we're at the Olympics. What was the goal of the Olympics? And then I think it's perspective. So kind of like this was mentioned, I think the journaling right after is good. Write the race down of what you remember of it. Circle all the positive things of it. And then just maybe revisualize that moment and making those adjustments. Because it is hard it's 1,500 meters, and you don't have much time to make any type of adjustment. So I think the good news is she didn't end there. She was able to move on. So she made an adjustment in the middle of the race that may have cost her, but she moved on to semis, and obviously we know what happened. She made the final, so which is huge. So now I think it's just, if it's a confidence builder, it's just going back to what were our goals, and I think a lot of it's perspective, because you just got to shake it off. She's a professional athlete, and she just needs to visualize on, hey, let's not dwell on the quarter. She's done. She made it to semis, and it's just getting refocused in the semis, and she did well. She did great in the semis.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thanks. Rob, because you're really into track and field, you know the sport very well. And it's easy to replay the mistakes over and over in your mind and just replay that race, just the way it went. But what you want to do is have the athletes, as you say, play a new movie in your mind.
Right.
A new race. And
yeah, because like you're saying, what's happened now, she's using her left brain. So, you can write that stuff down, analyze it, and then just review everything that was positive and get rid of it, and then go back to the right side of the brain and just be recreative for, because she moved on, It'd be one thing. I think it's a little bit tougher if she didn't move on and that was it, and then she would attribute that whole not moving to the next round because of that one mistake. So the good news is, hey, it's done. You learn from it, new perspective, let's get into the semis, and it's a restart, because anything can happen at semis, too. We've seen people that are supposed to make it to the finals not even make it to the finals. Look at the men's 400 in the sprints. We don't even have the U.S. We didn't have anybody make it. It's just incredible.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's true. All kinds of things can happen. And you get bumped, like in 1500, it's like you do get bumped around a lot because people are vying for position, and you don't have your own lane like you do in the 400 of the sprints. Everybody's in the middle there. So it's kind of like you have to just, rather than fighting with that, which I think she was, you have to sort of accept it and say, okay, this is part of the sport.
That's the thing, it's... And I guess this is kind of where I have a struggle sometimes with the visualization, because you want to visualize your race, how you're going to run it, and almost just focus on what you're going to do. And because all kinds of things, to try to predict what's going to happen in the race and putting yourself in there, I've done that, and it's just not gone well. So I think it's just you focus on what you plan to do, how you're going to execute it, and you run your own race. Because typically, towards the end, it's going to be tactical at some point, and that's where it gets tricky. There's too much thinking going on. I think if you just say, look, this is how I'm going to run my race. If I'm in the front or in the back, based on how I'm running my race, that's what's going to happen, because you know, as an athlete, you'll know where your strengths and weaknesses are. I mean, if you look at the 10,000 meter, you know, the time was 27:30. You know, Rupp gets second, Mo gets first, but they all ran a 53 and change last quarter after 6 miles. But the reality is, at least 10 of those other athletes that they're competing with have run 30 seconds faster than that winning time. And most of them obviously didn't run their own race. They ran Rupp's race and Mo's race, and they played into their hands. So some of those guys, you'd be kicking yourself going, I've run so much faster than this. Why didn't I just run my own race? And sometimes you just have to eliminate the tactics and run, you know, and just be tactical for your own self instead of reacting to what everyone else is doing. Just run your own race.
Yeah.
And I think if you do that, especially because the guys that do that, they'll do well. I mean,
yeah.
I guess, you know, Olympics gets weird, and it's just everything's tactical. Everyone's just shooting for positioning, and it's that's a challenging thing.
Yeah, so that's great, Rob. Yeah, thanks. Just wanted to hear from everyone that wants to jump in. Yeah, Daryl, what do you think? Are you there?
Yes, I am. I was just thinking, too, did they have access to previous clips of their performances?
Access to what?
Thinking, like, would that help? Previous clips of, like, being, you know what I mean, like video clips of themselves? You know what I mean? To see themselves as a success visually, you know, that way, too. I didn't know if they had access to, you know, video clips, whether it's, you know, on an iPad, too, or whatever, you know, whatever they have.
Yeah, well, from that particular race or previous races, do you mean?
I'm thinking previous races, you know, seeing themselves as a success there, you know what I mean? And then just seeing it,
right?
Just visualizing it, you know, seeing it first and then preparing that way, too. I just wondered if that was something they have access to there.
Yeah, everybody's got iPads and their iPods and iPhones and just about every kind of technology you can think of. So yeah, you're right, and that's a really good thing to look at. Most people can look themselves up on YouTube, and you know, just about, you know, there's all the previous races are on there. So yeah, it is a really good. I always have my athletes do that. To look at either yourself, you know, a great performance, or other, you know, athletes that you like, you know, if they have really good form, or another athlete that you want to emulate and model. If you can look at other good athletes too, you can learn a lot from them, or imagine yourself, you know, running with the form of some and good positioning of other. Athletes that you look up to. So both of those can work well as the animal kind of thing. You know, I said, as soon as we were talking with Shannon about imagining the tiger, she went online right away and went to YouTube and typed in, you know, tigers. And so we were watching tigers, you know, kind of the way that they think and run and all. And that was interesting to have that kind of visual, too, of something. Because she's so used to looking at runners, and it was nice to have something different, a tiger to look at, to kind of get out of that same, different mode of thinking. Somebody else who's running, but a totally different kind of species. So,
and I was hearing the song, Eye of the Tiger. In my head, as you're mentioning that. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, exactly, right. So that's a great suggestion. Yeah, Daryl with the video clips, too, yeah. Anna, are you there, too?
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah, what were you thinking?
Well, those were all wonderful contributions. I was thinking more of focusing, obviously, all the suggestions, but also focusing on the reset button, as you alluded to before. Another race, another time, another opportunity, and playing a lot into that as far as building the confidence, playing on past performances as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for sure. Because everybody there's had great performances in the past, or they wouldn't be there. And so, Shannon, so that's exactly what we did, in fact, with that next the session when I worked with her in London right after the semifinals or the quarterfinals. I worked with her by phone there, and we worked on. She said, you know, at the Olympic trials before that, she felt so much more confident, and she felt like she was, you know, she said my moves were really clean and clear, and you know, I just was confident going into it. I was saying to myself, these girls are not going to beat me. I'm moving forward. She said, was saying to herself, I am going to come out on top. And she had such a strong, you know, sense of what was going to happen. And the two, you know, the two laps, the first two laps, she was calm and going, just being able to conserve her energy and prepared herself really well. And then, so for the third lap, she was able to slowly start building her kick and then just making the decision to go for it. So she wasn't wasting energy at all. And so she said that that's what she wants to do for this the next race coming up, was to, you know, use her energy wisely and stay calm and be aware, be in the moment, and you know, allow herself to think clearly and be content and calm and be patient, you know, finding, so you find that right time, so you're not, because in that first race she felt like she felt boxed in and she wanted to get out and around, and she was working, you know, using a lot of energy trying to get out of situations. So when it came time to, you know, just that third lap, she was kind of out of energy. But if she can just, even if she is boxed in, just to be okay with that for a little bit and just be comfortable, she said that's all right. You know, save her energy for the last 600 meters, and then you can position yourself for that kick. So I had her go back to that. To the Olympic trials in the visualization and have her imagine that. And also another thing I did was I kind of call it the ball technique of when you have a thought. She kept saying to herself, I don't want to get boxed in, don't want to get boxed in. And she says she remembers in my book, she read, she's reading the book, Your Performing Edge book every day over there for the last month when I gave it to her. She's actually using that as her regular manual, and she, you know, reads a chapter every night, so it's kind of exciting, and that these techniques are really at work at the Olympics right now. She said that she remembers in the Your Performing Edge book how it I was working with one cyclist there who got in a lot of accidents, and I asked him, what are you saying to yourself? And he said, I hope I don't crash. And of course he's reinforcing the very thing that he wants to avoid. And I said, well, what do you want to say? And he said, what do you want to happen? And he said, you know, the opposite of that, to just be calm. I want to, you know, have the right amount of space between me and the person in front of me, and feel comfortable, you know, riding in the pack. So it's very similar with cyclists in a pack as it is runners. So she really related to that. So I said, when you think of being boxed in, or that thought, why don't you imagine that there's a ball out in front of you, a large beach ball, and put that thought into the ball, and then just blow it away, and actually do an exhale, and just imagine that ball is getting down to, you know, going further away. Now it's the size of a soccer ball, and then blow it away again, and now it's down to the size of a softball, and then it's down to the size of a tennis ball, and then it's a golf ball, and then it's completely gone. So she liked that idea of, you know, do something physically with that thought. If you're actually, you know, imagining this ball that you're blowing away, and in fact, it's, you know, you can use alliteration, because beach ball and, or you know, boxed in begins with B, and then just think of, as soon as you think of that, think, okay, ball, just put it into the ball and just blow it away. And blow it away is also with a B. So she could just blow all those thoughts away, and that gives her some physical way to get rid of that thought, and then just be able to take her next breath in and breathe in something that she does want, which is, you know, just feel comfortable running in the pack. So that technique worked really well. I storytelling is a really powerful technique that I was using with her. Think of a story that's relevant to this situation, And then, of course, there's so many amazing stories we've heard with the Olympics already. And there was one I just saw recently with, you know, it could be even in a different sport. I think it's nice to, you know, just take a different sport that has the same kind of story or lesson that you want to teach. There's that guy, Daniel Leva. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. I think it's that. And he was, you know, he's on our U.S. gymnastics team. And he was competing for the all-around and, you know, did a fantastic floor exercises routine. And then he got to the pommel horse, and he just, it was a total disaster. You know, he was just, he got ahead of himself, and he fell off the pommel horse completely. Had to restart, which just really blows his score, you know, way down. And so he got up there and finished it anyway. And, you know, you'd think at that point, he would just think, oh, geez, it's over now. There's no way I can get any kind of, medal, in this event. But he kept going, and he refueled his fire. And, you know, he had to do all the other events in the all around, and he just nailed him and did fantastically, and he ended up with the bronze medal in the overall. I'm pretty sure about that. I've got to go back and look at all the records there, but I think that that's what I saw on his interview, and it was amazing to see his. You know, I saw him interviewed by Bob Costas, and you know, he just talked about how he basically, like we were talking about, hit the reset button and said, okay, well, that event's over. I'm just moving on to the next one. And he was just able to have a short memory and erase that experience and move on. And just, God, it's phenomenal how he was able to, with a disaster like that, be able to continue on and actually get the bronze medal. And, you know, Shannon was really inspired by that story. And I said, one thing that's even better for you, Shannon, is, you know, in the gymnastics, like that, the all-around, you've got these scores. And so if you've got a really bad score on one event, like the pommel horse, that counts against you for your total score. So that's always hanging over you. Whereas in your event, Shannon, you've got now you've moved on to the semifinals. Now you've got a clean slate. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter what you ran in the previous race. You're all starting at the same starting line. You all have the same chance. You got a new race, a new chance. And all is forgiven, anything that went on before that, a clean start. And so that was gave her a lot of hope as well, that sense of, you know, in racing like that, once you move on, you've got a chance to do, you know, the only thing that's holding you back is any memories in your mind that might be lingering. So if you can get rid of those and just say, hey, this is... And go back to that sense of gratefulness. I'm glad I'm here. I actually made it to the next round. Then you can perform a lot better. So so storytelling can be a great way to, if you can come up with a story either in your own experience as an athlete or one of your other clients as you know, something that they've experienced or just something you've seen on TV or in the media. That's happened. You know, those kinds of things can really inspire your athletes to do well. So, yeah, propel you forward. So we did a visualization. Then I did one with Shannon about the Olympic trials. You know, because she had that really strong, good feeling there of when she, you know, that, which was recently, just a month ago, that she performed well, and she to get back in that kind of mindset, have that sharpness back, and do a good job of, and she says, I do a really good job of learning from experience, so that's a good thing to emphasize with her, with your athletes. Anything that they give you that's a strength, write that down, and then tell them, you know, give them that as feedback, and put that in the visualization, too. So we did the visualization and including all of these things, and I reinforced all the different skills we've been talking about, the tiger mentality and the reset button and the soft eyes and the magnet technique and using all those things. So it was kind of a two-part visualization. It was the, you know, going over her experience in the Olympic trials and the confidence she had there. And then I said, now let's carry all that energy with you into the the Olympics here in the semifinals and see yourself, you know, having that same confidence and having that Olympics trials mentality of saying to yourself, I'm going to come out on top, and you know, my moves are clean. I've got confidence going in. I'm moving forward. All those things that she was saying, you know, be able to have. It's almost as though, even though you're in the Olympics, you can think of yourself as being in the Olympic trials. You know, you can actually imagine yourself there. Just like, you know, of course, you know the Ironman story. When I was feeling bad there and almost dropped out, I just took myself to a totally different place and imagined myself in the San Francisco Marathon, feeling strong and with that really good race, and with that visualization, I had the momentum kept building and building, and you know, with the Ironman, I was able to, you know, go from 19th place to second place just by taking myself to a time when I was strong. So so I did that with Shannon there, with that visualization, and then she. Excuse me just a second. Had some background noise out there, so get rid of that, close the window. So after we did the visualization, she said that was perfect. You know, that really, really made a huge difference. And so she ended up, Rob mentioned, if you've been watching the results, she did end up using that. She played it over several times, she said, and then she got in the semifinals, which was yesterday. She ended up qualifying, she was just barely, just again, just there was like five, I guess she was in the top five, and number six did not make it, and she was in the top five, but the top five were very close together in time, so she was able to use the kinds of things that we were talking about in the visualization there and do exactly what she wanted and progress on to the finals. So she's getting stronger mentally as well as, I think, physically with each of these races. Let me open it up for... then she'll be racing this Friday at Friday evening, I think around 7:45 or 8 o'clock p.m. You can see her on NBC there. I'm sure they'll televise it. It'll be Friday evening here, so we might... I don't know what time they'll show it, but then you'll be able to see it on the NBCOlympics.com website as well. And I'll keep you informed about that. So, let me open it up for questions here, too. And reactions. Was this helpful for you? And what kinds of questions or comments do you have? Anybody can jump in.
Hi, I wanted to ask a question. It's Amy.
Hi.
Is she big on pre-game rituals and routines? Is that a big part of her preparation?
Yeah, that's a good question, Amy. And she does certain things. Well, she right now, sort of doing the visualizations that we've doing, have become a major part of her pre-race routine. So that's good. But I should ask about other things too. What were you thinking?
Just things, you know, that she does, like something that she would eat, or her sleeping patterns, or whether she needs to get herself psyched up more or more relaxed, you know, to kind of get a gauge on how she's feeling, whether is she nervous, does she need to be, you know, kind of relaxing more and calming down, or does she need that psyching up, you know, does it differ? Because I was reading an article yesterday about how these elite athletes, that's such a big part of their preparation, is their rituals and their pre-game routines, what they do.
Yeah, exactly, and I think it is. Yeah, Amy, that's a really good point. That it's that's why I think the anchor that we talk about is a really good. That can be a really valuable pre-race routine of having an anchor of some sort, a success anchor, a gesture that you do before every one of your races or your games. You know, a fist pump or something that you do that reminds you of success. So, you know, like for yeah, for Shannon, we talk about the, yeah, like the fist pump is really good for her or something. But it's a good thing to remind athletes to do that. Like when I worked with Stacey, Trujillo was clapping her hands three times that reminded her of success. And so it is good to, I think sometimes athletes, when they get nervous and it's the big race or the big event, they tend to want to try new things or try something different, and they go out of their regular routine, and that can kind of mess things up. And I think it's good to remind Shannon and remind your athletes to, you know, it's best to stay with what works and just stay in that regular routine, because it gives you a sense of calmness and so that you don't have to be focusing on the fact that the whole world is, you know, looking at me right now. This is, or thinking about this one race could determine my future, or, you know, all those kinds of things create a huge amount of pressure. But if you can just get into a regular routine, as you say, Amy, and just doing your regular things, then you can. I think it can help you to remind you that, hey, I'm just doing the things that I do every day, doing the routine that I've been doing for years. And so all I need to do is run the race that I know how to run. I think they said that in, they were doing that with the gymnasts, Gabby, who got, you know, it's amazing, did a Gabby Douglas that got our, a gold medal in the all around for gymnastics. I think right before she did one of her events there, one of the other athletes was talking to her, one of the older ones on our team, and she was saying, just be normal, you know, you don't have to be extraordinary, just be normal, just do what you do every day. And because these athletes obviously are such at a high level, you know, they are extraordinary, and being normal is being extraordinary. But you remind yourself that, hey, I just doing my regular thing, running. I've run this race a million times, or I've swam. You know, Misty Hyman, when I worked with her, she said, I've done a million 200 meter butterflies. This is, you know, I'm just going to do another one here. And remind yourself that this is I'm doing my pre-race routine, and then I'm just going to do my race the way I know how to do it. So that's Amy, that's a really good point. I think about the pre-race routine.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. And I think that's something, if you can remind your athletes all of that, with tennis that you're into, Amy, just thinking of, you know, like some athletes with tennis will, put their hands on the strings of the tennis racket, and they touch the tennis racket a certain way, and that, or they turn around and they do something with the racket and the ball, and they always do that to kind of like a reset after each point. So it's a way to say, okay, a new mind, new this is a new point, new game, new mindset. So great, yeah. Yeah, other comments? Is this helpful for you guys?
Dr. Joanne, I had a question.
Sure. Hi, Daryl.
This is Daryl. Yeah, I just had a question of, like, when do you contact them? Do you, or do they contact you? You know what I mean? Is there like a, do you check in with them, say how you doing, or do they just like contact you to say, hey, I need help with this? Or I'm just trying to think, is there a certain way that you would contact them or let them contact you at certain times? I know that everybody has different situations, but I was just thinking, you know, obviously if they had a bad race, they might come to you right away, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Just like Shannon did with this race where she almost didn't qualify. You know, she sent me an email and said, hey, is there time we can talk? I think it's a good idea to set up a regular schedule with your athletes, you talk with them once a week during, you know, a regular season kind of thing, at minimum once a week, and then during the the actual event, when they're getting to the Olympics, then you can accelerate that. And, you know, like with Shannon and I, have been talking about every other day, every 2 days or so. And so, It depends on their when they're competing. Like she's competing this Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So we've been working like right after her event the next day, because it's I'm back in the States now here, and it's 8 hours difference. You know, we said actually we're going to talk today at 12 o'clock my time, 8 o'clock her time, in an hour from now, and help her get ready for the finals here. And so it's, you know, it has to be sort of, well, your schedule, what your schedule can handle, and what their needs are. And I would say, especially during a major event like this, it's good to make yourself more available and to be able to check in and say, hey, if anything comes up, you know, just feel free to call or email me. And then always after each session, you know, plan the next time that you're going to meet, so you don't just leave them hanging. It's always I always have my appointment book out, and just say, hey, it's let's plan to touch base on you know, this day, you know, 2 days from now or 3 days from now, and set up a specific time and day to do that, so that and that really gives the athletes a sense of security that you are there for them, and that you're. They can have that time to, because after a while they start to really depend on you, and I think it's a wonderful feeling. Like when I got that email from Shannon about the quarterfinals, it's really neat to have those kinds of that feedback, that she, you know, would look to me to get some help and encouragement in between times, because that's the time when when their coach. Doesn't, you know, they're talking, the coaches, if they have a bad race, a lot of times a regular athletic coach doesn't know how to deal with disappointments or bad races, or a lot of times regular coaches, some are good listeners, but in a lot of cases, coaches, you know, are not really good at listening. They'll just say, hey, here's what you did, and here's how you messed up, and here's how you got to change things, and, you know, just do it. And they aren't real good at, you know, actually letting the athlete just vent and talk about things. So that's where you can come in and, you know, be the listener and be the really supportive person. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So does that help, Daryl?
Yeah. No, it did.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, just you can just talk with them. I think so. It's good to always set up an appointment at the end of each session for the next time, and have a regular schedule of at least once a week. And then yeah, during the events, I'd say more often during the intense event here. And then even if they don't contact you, I think it's good to you know, email them with some more supportive material, like another visualization or another article that you've written. You know, you can email them something of encouragement, kind of thing. So, yeah. Yeah, Daron, what do you think? Are you there? I think Daron's on the cell phone.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Daron. Yeah, I just wondered if you had any other comments or questions or...
Yeah, I was thinking of, you know, when we do the anchor with our visualization and just anchors in general, what's the purpose of that anchor? You know, how do you see it again?
Yeah, I think an anchor is, you know, it's just something. First, what it is for the people that are new is we've got Anna that's new on the call, and there's another guy, Ryan, that'll be joining us too. Is anchor is just something that is that could be a color, a shape, or a word, or a physical gesture, something that you have a cue to remember, you know, to associate with success. So. You know, you ask a person to think of a time when they were successful, and then and imagine can you think of something to remember that experience by? So it could be, you know, a gesture is probably the most powerful thing. If you can do when you cross the finish line, you did a fist pump, or you put your hand in the air, or you did the okay sign, or the thumbs up, or something, you say a physical gesture, or it could be a, you know, maybe they remember some red roses at the end of the line, or they remember their, you know, blue uniform, or something to remember that by. And the idea is that you, you know, say when you do that fist pump, you build this association between that gesture and the feeling of success. So the more that you do that physical gesture, that anchor, the idea of an anchor is just to build that connection between doing that physical gesture and feeling really successful. Saying, you know, like when I won the San Francisco Marathon, I did the okay sign. I put my thumb and forefinger together. And so when I do that, it reminds me of the San Francisco Marathon, which reminds me of, you know, running a really great race and feeling, winning that race and feeling it was a huge achievement. So I can still do that same achievement. It might not be the same race, but it can be even in a different setting. I can still have that same kind of achievement, feeling of success. Does that kind of make sense? Jaron, yeah? Yeah. So the idea is just to have something that you can do that's simple. It could be with Shannon, it's the tiger now is kind of her anchor. She just says to herself, and her grandmother, I guess, passed away, I think, a year ago or so, and she thinks a lot about her sort of dedicating these races to her grandmother, who she calls Noni. So that gives her a lot of really good feelings. So she says to herself, Noni Tiger. So it gives her that feeling of comfort and gratefulness, and a really good feeling about dedicating this to her grandmother, and also the aggressiveness of the tiger there. That's sort of her anchor for the race. So it's something simple that you can do. I think it's really simple but powerful, that each person can do to you know, to just kind of bring all that attention and bring, you've got this huge thing that you feel like you're doing right before you, but it brings it all down to a simple you know, gesture of some sort, so you can just feel that sense of confidence and feel like, okay, I just got I can do this. Just put it helps you to get into that same mentality of when you first use that anchor. You know, maybe you can think of that anchor as relating it to a past previous performance and when you felt really good there, and then bringing all that confidence and power and inner strength right into your current event. So, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, thanks, Jaron. Thanks for asking. Yeah. Yeah, Anna, are you still there? I don't know, do you have any questions or thoughts?
I was actually just going to throw out, I really like your use of the animal analogy. And
whoa. Yeah, the animal analogy?
I really like the animal and identifying characteristics and even, you know, applying a visual online or all of that and applying that to the athlete. I think that's super powerful. So that's one of the things I took away. That was great.
Yeah, good. Okay, so that's good. And I think with the visuals online like that too, if you can have your athletes whatever you're thinking about and visualizing and seeing right before you go to sleep tends to be what you'll dream about. So if you can have your the athletes you're working with, say go online and look at YouTube, look at a great tigers if you want to look at that as a visual, you know, 5 minutes before you go to bed, or a great race, seeing yourself in a great race or someone else that you admire, a good model, right before you go to bed. Just do it 5 minutes right before you go to sleep. Have them look at this video or DVD or on TV, whatever you've got. Everybody's got access to online videos now. You can look up anything on YouTube, so you can see this. And it's the most powerful right before you go to bed. I know I was watching the women's, beach volleyball last night. It was just so fantastic. And so I was playing beach volleyball all night long in my sleep, winning the gold medal, which was nice. The other night before I went to bed, I was watching, you know, when they first started the women's gymnastics, they were showing the qualifying, and the Chinese were really messing up, and this girl's falling off the balance beam over and over, making major mistakes. I was watching that right before I go to bed. So what happens the first thing, of course, I go to sleep, now I'm falling off the balance beam. in, as I'm sleeping, because that's the last thing I watched. I mean, it's really powerful. So why not use all that power and make sure that the last thing that you're watching before you go to sleep is your is something really positive that's related to one of your goals. It's a good thing to do. I mean, when I was training for the Hawaii Ironman triathlon and working on my swimming, I would watch women's. I got some videos of the UC Berkeley women's swim team and watching their arm movements, and they had a lot of showing underwater what their arms were doing. And I would watch that for 5 minutes each night before I'd go to sleep while I was brushing my teeth. And then I'd notice that at nighttime I would be swimming for 8 hours of my sleep, going over these exact movements that the women were doing. And I'd wake up in the morning and get in the pool and have a much better feel for the water because my subconscious mind was working on that for several hours right before I went to sleep. So, yeah. All right. Well, any other questions? Thoughts? Final thoughts? Yeah, I just want to thank everyone. Thank you all for coming and for attending today and sharing your thoughts, all these, and giving your time, because I think this is really something that we can learn from with the Olympics. Are such a great not only an experience for just watching, but learning so much about what goes on. And I'm so happy and grateful to have been there at the right inside the Olympic Village, and working with athletes and sharing that with you, because these principles apply to every kind of athlete that you work with and every sport. And you can be really you can bring these techniques right into exactly what you're doing on a daily basis. So our next call will be on August the 23rd. They're always the second and fourth Thursday of the month at this time. So if you have questions in the meantime, feel free to email me, and I'll have this recording up in the next day here, and as well as the last one too. So thank you all for coming, and we'll see you on the next time, and we'll be rooting for Shannon here, as well as Sally Kipyego will be going for the, I'm working with her as well. She won the silver medal in the 10,000, and she'll be going for the 5,000 meters as well. She's qualified for that too. And of course, Meb Kavlitsky will be running the marathon coming up here too. Another one of my athletes, Alia Atkinson, she's competing for Jamaica. She made the finals in the 100-meter breaststroke, and she did really well there there too. So, yeah, these techniques, you can tell people these are really great stories that the Performing Edge coaching techniques are working, or at work at the Olympics right now. So thanks, everyone, for coming, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks here. All right.
Take care.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.